Mini episode 1628 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1628. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my good pal Ben Chu. And a lot of times when we have him on the show here, we are talking to him in his capacity as FDH Hoops Analyst. Sometimes in the course of the ongoing mini-series that we've been doing on the show as far as the business of the streaming industry that he and I are both fascinated with. This one today, a little bit different than that, but it's a little bit closer to the latter because it is about the business side of, I will say, technology at the very least here, because we're talking about Twitter with some of these very fascinating changes that are coming. It is a time of great transition over there, and specifically now, they have their new CEO coming in, Linda Yaccarino, and this is something where we are going to be taking a look at what Ms. Yaccarino will be dealing with on the business side here, some of the challenges, some of the things that are coming down the pike for Twitter. And again, always great to have Ben Chu with me here. Ben, let's take a look at what's going on and see if we can't tell them how to run their business, right?
we'll see what we can do, Rick. I can only do so much in life.
Exactly. Well, we'll give our 2 cents worth just the way that it seems like everybody else is. And one of the things that was the impetus for doing this segment now, you and I were talking off air over the weekend about this new rate limit per day that was announced by Elon Musk about throttling back the ability of the users to go in and look at as many posts per day. And that was a thing where it seemed to cause a little bit of, a great deal of, I guess I would say, alarm out there. And I remember remarking to you that I had heard about it on, like, national sports talk radio shows, that they were talking about that, like, oh, well, you know, don't know if we're going to be able to use Twitter quite as much. And that was one of those things where I said to you that I might be a little bit alarmed if I was them based on the way that that went down as far as the announcement went, because it seemed like it was sort of spilling over into the mainstream a little bit. There have been a lot of doom and gloom predictions that have been made over the last several months. And yes, there are some aspects of Twitter that people don't like as much these days. But the doom and gloom, I think, has been very much overblown. There were people that were acting like it had 24 hours to live at some point, and a lot of the doom and gloom predictions that have been made thus far have been way overblown. It's still here. It's still functioning. It's still going through. But it is one of these things where it felt like over the weekend, this might be an inflection point and an opportunity for them to kind of stop, take a look around, and see about how these things are communicated. And I would fully expect that the new CEO will be very integral to how matters like this are announced to the public going forward.
Right. And she was brought on by Musk specifically from her time at NBC Universal.
That's right. Long time.
To bring in, you know, to improve ad revenue, because obviously with Musk taking over, there was a huge exodus of brands who would be spending advertisement on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And putting up big numbers in terms of that. And I think the question, too, ultimately becomes, Rick, is does this eventually start to push us towards a paid-only Twitter? And, again, I don't think there's any necessary plan in the next 4 to 6 months right now, but I feel like if we're talking about tweet limits and you know, view limits, and with the verified accounts now having a higher ability to look at more posts, the question starts to become when does Twitter become a fully paid service or subscription-based service at the end of the day? But it was a very interesting thing. There wasn't a lot of, what would we say, Rick? The PR wasn't exactly great over it, and I know there's a bunch of, whether it's sports, whether it's weather, whether it's entertainment, that weren't exactly super happy about hearing these temporary limits being imposed.
Yes, and as far as it goes with Ms. Yaccarino, of course, being the NBC Universal sales chief prior to this and a top executive at the Turner Networks prior to that, that, as you said, she comes in, she's going to be integral on the sales side, on the business side. She's going to be very much focused on how to try to make Twitter financially stable going forward. And again, this whole thing of making it a pay service going forward, this is something that you and I have discussed off air. And what I can tell you just from reading up and preparing for this segment a little bit, and looking at Ms. Yaccarino's statements that she made upon being named CEO of Twitter, she kept using the phrase global town square for Twitter. And that's a thing where, again, not using that exact verbiage, but I had communicated that to you previously, that off air, that I felt like Twitter could not afford to lose this. It's the central place you go to it. Whenever there is anything that is big happening in the world, good, bad, horrible, great, whatever it is, you go to Twitter, you look to see what's being reported on, you look to see what people are talking about it, that it has that kind of centrality that all these other wannabe services will never have. And it's a thing where I have to think that their minds are particularly focused at a time like this. Mark Zuckerberg talking about, I don't know how much he's talked about, but it certainly has leaked out that they are looking at a potential competitor for Twitter. And that should be something that's very much focusing the mind of the executives over at Twitter, because that could be a very, very serious matter to have to compete if Zuck can get something up like that, because you don't want to surrender that ground. And to see that the new CEO has used that term, global town square, that's what I want to see as a consumer of Twitter, because you want to have something that as many people as possible continue to be on. That, of course, is something that is fundamentally incompatible with becoming a pay-only service.
Right, and Twitter, on top of that, too, is also facing other challenges from some other smaller names. Mastodon was a big one that a lot of people were talking about during that timeline. Mm-hmm. Musk eventually taking over, people mitigating off the platform. Former CEO Jack Dorsey is also working on a sort of a comparative Twitter, sort of a decentralized Twitter application called Blue Sky that also, because of these Twitter limits, saw a huge amount of initial beta signups. So it's going to be very interesting. So Twitter's going to have a lot of, probably I would make the argument, Rick, the most competition they've had in a long time. Because while we have Facebook, while we have Instagram, while we have Snapchat, while we have TikTok, Twitter is its own individual being. And we know this too, especially with legacy brands, Rick. And despite what people will say about Twitter and Musk and all that, but Twitter is a legacy brand at this point.
Absolutely.
When you have a legacy brand like that, that following and that engagement is always going to be there no matter what, because you're going to have lifers who will always be on the platform no matter what.
Yes, and to see from the new CEO, she is saying that is their aspiration, is to continue to remain that central to the global conversation at all times. That makes me kind of breathe a sigh of relief, because it shows that it will still be the kind of place that we have been counting on it being over a period of time here. Because, again, just for any of us that have set up presences there and are used to being on there, it's preferable to be able to stay there and continue to engage there rather than have to, you know, tear up shop and go set up someplace else. I do think that the vast majority of people out there are looking for Twitter to continue to be a place where they can do that. And that is a relief to hear that is what the aspiration is. It's a matter of how you get from here to there. And this is what I've also said to you off air. I do have sympathy for the notion of trying to keep it as being that utopian type of place whilst still turning a profit. Because over a long period of time, I don't believe Twitter was doing very well financially. The period of time, if you go back to when people consider it to have been the ultimate nirvana in terms of their own experience with it, and that was before probably paid ads and anything like that, it was also struggling the most financially. So it's a balance here. You have to build something that people want to be on, that people really want to be on, whilst at the same point in time being able to make enough money to keep the lights on here. And that is a balance that is very, very, very difficult. And when people fall in love with this whole utopian thing like Twitter in its early to mid years and what it was like then, it does set up something that becomes unrealistic going forward, that when you make changes, it's, oh, they're selling out, oh, they're watering it down. And that's the thing. I think guys like me and you can see the balance in this, though, that you have to keep as much of it in there of what people really loved and what drew them to it in the first place, whilst making changes that will help you to be more profitable, that aren't judged to be obtrusive by the public that is consuming your service. It really is a very delicate balance.
Right, and I think the major issue, too, is that Musk, we all know, is a deemedly controversial figure in this timeline.
Yes.
So there's obviously going to be initial pushback from advertisers or anyone in regards to his first year at Twitter or putting everything together. As we both know, too, he spent a lot of money on it.
Yes.
So it does feel like at some point they're really he's really pushing some sort of idea that can work. And there was also discussions, too, whether they were serious or not, of bringing back some of the older apps that had ceased to exist, like Vine and Periscope and all these sort of things that could maybe broaden Twitter's appeal at some point. But again, we discussed this already. It's a much different social landscape than it was when Twitter was trying to be all sort of a social media platform.
Yes. Well, it's a thing also, too, where you talk about Vine, the ultimate short form in video, versus Twitter now looking to become a host destination for entities like Tucker Carlson, cast out of Fox News, setting up shop at least temporarily there on their service. And he may very well stick around in this form. He'll probably be doing something else eventually on another platform. But that's a question that people have had. Now, he's had very good numbers thus far as the people who've at least checked out his videos. But it requires something of a re-education to people in terms of, I'm going to go watch such and such show on Twitter. People are not really used to doing that. Now, again, guys like me and you, we don't mind watching whatever on any type of devices, but I'm highly unusual in that regard. I still have a lot of friends who are very stick in the mud, and some that are my age and even younger that are sticks in the mud of, I want to watch what I want to watch on TV. So it becomes a difficult sell to a lot of people out there. And my guess is you're probably not going to see a whole lot of folks doing the Tucker Carlson type thing, longer form video on Twitter. My guess is it's going to be fewer and further between with the folks trying to do that. But it is something where Twitter is sort of opening a new door there as far as seeing if it can be a home for longer form video. And we'll have to see how that plays out. There's going to have to obviously be a friendlier interface with the smart TVs and everything, I think, if that ends up being an aspiration of theirs down the road.
Right, and I think it was something that they definitely had for a while with live streaming with Periscope, and also for that timeline, too, with Vine. It's just,
yes,
it was one of those things where it felt like, to me, that Twitter was just too early.
Yeah, could have been.
Because it shows that in future years, Rick, that live streaming has become huge, and that short-form video has become huge. It's just more the issue of just trying to monetize and advertise. And that's the thing, like, despite of whatever political spectrum you're on, that's why the Tucker Carlson scenario is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of the first time where you have someone who has a relatively high persona specifically creating content just for a singular social media platform.
Yes.
And again, there obviously Facebook Watch has had shows with Jada Pinkett Smith and a host of others at that point. But the question ultimately will become is that Twitter's, like you said, the interface is not exactly great for long-form video.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with also the discussion, too, of Musk now, due to the temporary limits, you're not allowed to view tweets or videos of tweets unless you're logged into the platform at this period of time. So the discovery aspect or discovery angle is right now in a very weird spot. And I do think at some point, too, this is why I feel like a subscription-based Twitter is coming, just because whenever we see a timeline where temporary limits are always being pushed onto a platform, that usually means that they're at least kind of, it's either something in terms of the algorithmic, you know, parts of the platform or the data entry with Google Cloud. It was just more in terms of just seeing what, it wouldn't be surprising, this is a minor test to see what could occur if there was just a paid version of Twitter only. I don't have any real proof of that. I don't have any, you know, sources that are telling me that. But it would not shock me that this is partially a trial to see if a paid-only Twitter could work hypothetically.
I come from the school of thought that there's nothing wrong with trial balloons, even ones that are outlandish. So I actually don't have a problem with things being floated, because sometimes it helps you to appreciate things more when there aren't the changes made that you fear may be coming down the road. And it is possible that what you're saying sort of fits into that dynamic. And again, as far as a subscription model for it, it is possible. How that would fit, though, with the whole global town square remains to be seen. And that's where, again, longer form video, that is something that could fit into it as well. And of course, when you have an executive like Ms. Iaccarino coming over from NBC Universal, like I said, Twitter prior to that, what is she an expert on? Long form video, especially in the televised form. So we could be seeing more like that. We could see Twitter kind of broadening out more into that area. And again, and there may be possibilities to be had there, because who's to say that Twitter can't evolve in that type of a way? So the evolution that might be coming here, it's going to be really fascinating to see, because that's an area that has not been explored by Twitter previously. And again, it's going to be one of these things of trial and error as far as will long form video work there? Will it be something that will draw enough eyeballs? Yes or no? I mean, I think we're going to be getting into a period of time here, even more so than what we've seen, where you're going to see ideas getting floated and things being tried and new directions being proposed. I will say, in terms of the limits here, I think there's a matter of the psychology of it. And Elon Musk did clarify subsequently that the limit for unverified accounts will be going up to 1,000 per day. But it's one of those things where, for those of us who take time, generally a couple of times a day, to do a good amount of scrolling through on there, like, there's a lot of days where I probably didn't come close to 600, but in my mind, I probably think I was over 600. How do you gauge how many you've read in one day? It's not the kind of experience that's really set up for thinking, you know, you set your phone down and you think, oh, I just read or skimmed over 135 tweets. The notion of it going up to 1,000 certainly makes me feel better, and that's one of those things where, again, the scraping that's being done by the robots for AI, this is one of these things, as I joked about with you off air, when you're subscribed to 14 AI newsletters the way that I am, you're going to see this get touched on. It was a chance for me to be educated on this a little bit more after you and I talked. And again, I don't know what kind of cost that puts on Twitter to have that be done. Obviously, there must be some for this to be this kind of a reaction. But the way that it was reacted to, raising the limits after the early outpouring from people, that to me was a good kind of a reassuring notion going forward, because you have to be responsive to people's concerns. And I do think that's a large part in the first place of what Ms. Iaccarino was hired for, to be able to come into Twitter and be the face of the operation as the CEO, and be able to, I think, thrive in a role previously, like she had done previously with NBC Universal.
Right, and I think one of the biggest things too, Rick, is that anytime we see limits on something, especially within social media, whether it's the use of screen time or anything like that, like we inherently see social media as the timeline part of the aspect, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. It just keeps on going.
Yeah.
And it's a synapsis mind hit at every period of time. So when you see a scenario where you're going to see errors, like this is the most you can read, I think a lot of people have a very visceral outlook on that, regardless of the platform. And I feel like, too, if we looked on, and again, too, it's like, it's also slowly crafting the verified versus non-verified narrative. And it's, again, that's why I feel like this is more of a future push that we will see a paid-only Twitter. And Musk has talked about this in prior interviews, about maybe having a singular website, that Twitter is essentially a singular social media entity that takes in some of the stuff that like TikTok does well and Instagram does well. And Twitter will be a part of that, but it won't be existing as just Twitter on its own.
Well, I think if it was ever going to go to a subscription model, I think at minimum it would have to incorporate those other elements and be more of a forum for, again, long-form video, a destination place for that. Because, again, everything that you do along those lines moves further away from the goal of remaining a global town square, which, again, I Ms. Iaccarino, using that phrase, like I said, I'm heartened by that because, again, we don't want any of us to use Twitter. We don't want it to stop being what it is as far as a place that, I mean, if it's something great that's happening in the world, if it's something horrifying that's happening in the world, if it's the Super Bowl and you want to see what everybody's got to say, we all have these times during the year, a lot of them, where we go, where we're glued to Twitter, we want to see what the reaction is, and we want it to remain that. And so, again, how we get from here to there as far as her vision of maintaining it as such, that's what's going to be interesting in the time ahead, and that's what you and I will be watching for, Ben Chu.
Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting with now many of these Twitter competitors coming out.
Yes.
Will they gain any traction? Will there be any sort of concern that if Twitter essentially becomes more of a paid service, will people look towards some of these other apps? And it will be very interesting to see if the Twitter model works in a decentralized platform.
Yes. Well, it's one of these things, too, where, you know, Ms. Iaccarino's former home, the Turner Networks here, you go back further in time to the late 90s here, the Monday Night War, when they had WCW going against the WWF at the time here. Competition always breeds the best out of both sides here. So whether it be Zuckerberg bringing on his version of an imitation or anything else that anybody's got there, all we're going to see is, I think, better results in the end. Again, steel sharpens steel, whatever kind of cliche you want to use, competition does bring out the best for the consumer in the marketplace here. So that's one of those things where, and a lot of times leads a company to be even more profitable in the end. Having the competition from WCW, that's one of the main reasons that the WWF at the time was able to go public and become the behemoth that they would become subsequently, making such huge money off of TV and everything else like that, stemming from that period of competition when they got hot again. So this is one of these things where, you know, on the surface, having Zuck coming after them and some of these other competitors here, it may not seem like it's that great necessarily, but in the end, particularly if you can win that competition, boy, oh boy, the possibilities are endless as far as what you can build at that point in time with an improved product.
Right, and I think one of the major things too, Rick, just seeing with what the social media landscape's going to look like, is we still have very set fragmented systems, and I'm intrigued to see if Facebook becomes more of a centralized platform, with the whole Meta platform gets more centralized with their own version of Twitter. And we'll see. There's a lot of moving around. We also can't forget about TikTok and then the bans that are associated with that coming up. So there's just, it's a very weird timeline for social media, but there's a lot of, it might also be the most diverse and well-funded timeline as well.
Yes, very much so. And how AI factors into all of this, and of course, again, AI factors into the recent developments here as far as Elon Musk's decision to limit the Twitter access a little bit on a daily basis because of the web scraping robots out there. But seeing how AI is going to influence these platforms going forward. So many different elements to it, but much like any time you and I have been breaking down the streaming business, nobody better to do it with than my good pal, FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu. Ben, thank you so much for being part of this great discussion today.
I appreciate it as always, Rick.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you everybody for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1628.